Okay, folks, let's reconvene, please. Thank you. All right, so we do have three speaker cards, and you know, perhaps what we should do is to hold our questions after we hear the other presenters, and that way we can encapsulate their input to the presentation and then continue. So I will start with Mr. Kirk Schmidt, who had requested 5 minutes.
Good morning, Chairman Wolf, members of the board, Kirk Schmidt, Preservation Inc. I've appeared before you, I think now, for 15 years. And I was at the State Water Board meeting on the State Water Board workshop on Wednesday at the East San Joaquin order, and I was able to spend 9 hours in Sacramento reflecting on nitrate usage. And as a result, I didn't have I didn't make my submission to your board in a timely fashion so that I could have either a handout or a PowerPoint for you, so I apologize for that. But one of the things that came up during that hearing, and the key, one of the key factors of the East San Joaquin order is the a change to the precedential requirement, if it's adopted, of looking at applied N from all sources, including groundwater, to N removed. And there's some many other issues with that I won't go into right now. However, in their draft order, they specifically exclude high N applied if the only source of N is from groundwater. So if the reason you exceed the, if you become an outlier, as they put it, or as we would put it from the point of view of looking at a bell curve, if you were a student, if you became an F student, and the only reason was because of high groundwater N, that would not put you in the outlier category because you had no other control other than using the groundwater, which does make sense. Chris Rose made a presentation this last summer to the Strawberry Commission in Santa Maria where he talked about the results of the total nitrogen applied system you use now in Region 3, which I guess would be supplanted by the A over R system proposed by the State Board. But as a result of these, the work he's done on, in this case, the presentation, because it was to the Strawberry Board, was on strawberries. He was able to show that the many of the strawberries, or probably 20% of the strawberries, are over-fertilized based on the bell curve established. And then if you included the groundwater, it skewed it even more so that a greater percentage of the strawberry crop was apparently over-fertilized. But as part of the presentation by Mr. Rose, he also had a chart showing a comparison between the crop, as he put it, end demand and the end removed at harvest. And what the crop end demand was the actual nitrate uptake by the crop, the amount of nitrate that was necessary for the crop to grow. And Dr. Kahn did the same thing here where he did not refer to the N removed, but he did refer to the amount of N that was taken up by the crop compared to the amount of fertilizer put onto the crop. And this is going to become more and more important as we move forward with scoring various farmers against each other for the same crop. For example, strawberries, the N uptake is between, and this is from Mr. Rose's work as an agronomic professor, the typical N uptake of strawberries was between 200 and 260 pounds per acre, but the N removed was 92 to 100, so that if you made a ratio just of the uptake, and we're never going to get to the world where we have just the perfect amount of N uptake because there's inefficiencies in the system due to soil, water, climate, and other factors. But if you just look at the uptake ranges to the removed ranges, your 2.1 to 2.6 to 1 right there. So you're not going to be able to get any closer to 1 to 1 than that number, because that's how much the crop, the plant needs to survive. If you looked at broccoli, it was 180 to 300 pounds N uptake compared to 60 to 99 pounds of N removed. And again, so we're almost at a 3-to-1 ratio from uptake to removed. And so what we end up having to look at as we move forward are not just two numbers from a point of view of N application. We have to look at one number, which is the one that you need to be the most focused on, and that is the total amount of N applied. Because if somebody's growing a good crop with 250 pounds N and somebody else next door is applying 500, that probably that is unreasonable. But you also have to consider the amount that the plant needs in the, that is the full uptake of the plant, which is what's necessary for the plant to actually be successful and grow. And then the third one is the amount of N removed. And I thought it was a good opportunity to juxtapose that to Dr. Kahn's presentation. I do have some handouts with these numbers, and I will follow this up with a written correspondence to your board. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next speaker is Ms. Weinman. 3 minutes. Thank you.
Hi, good morning. My name is Claire Weinman. I'm the president of the Grower Shipper Association of Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo counties. We appreciate the work of UC Cooperative Extension. There's a lot of information presented, and it would have been helpful to review the slides before today. And we're still digesting this information on this important subject and would like to raise a few points for your consideration today. First, UCCE conducts important research and extension services. However, we want to make sure that they're not placed in a regulatory role, which would strain the relationship of trust and inhibit the information of exchange of information with farmers needed to move towards our mutual goal of improving and protecting water quality in agriculture. We want to make sure that we keep the cooperative in UCCE. Next, research is a moving target. What is presented is the best available information at this time, but this can change. It's also important to recognize that even though preliminary research results may be promising, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's ready or feasible to translate to commercial production. I see the scowl. Do you want to talk now or later?
I'm all ears.
Okay.
Okay. We'll finish up. We also feel that it's important to look at the whole picture. The nitrate concentration of irrigation water is one piece of the puzzle, but the presence and concentration of other constituents, such as salts and calcium, is another important factor. Waters that tend to be high in nitrate also tend to be high in salts, which can influence a variety of factors, such as the leaching fraction and ability of plants to take up those nutrients. Furthermore, some crop types are more tolerant of high salt levels than others. Lettuce and strawberries tend to be more sensitive to salts, while broccoli tends to be less sensitive. Finally, we'd like to reiterate our position that it is essential for the Water Board to develop and implement policies that encourage farmers to utilize groundwater with high nitrate concentration for irrigation whenever possible. More specifically, two examples of actions that would create a disincentive to be would be expanding the irrigation well monitoring requirement beyond the primary irrigation well and mandating average nitrate concentration of irrigation water for total nitrogen applied reporting. Other examples of policies proposed in the current draft of the Eastern San Joaquin Order include the current AR ratio calculation and the AR outlier identification. These would be detrimental to utilizing water that's high in nitrate. There is commitment to multi-generational stewardship of water resources, but it's not beyond the influence of present-day regulatory concerns. Pumping groundwater high in nitrate should be encouraged rather than penalized, and we encourage thoughtful consideration of policy development and implementation to avoid unintended consequences. Thank you.
Thank you. Next. Is and last speaker card. You don't?
No.
You change your mind?
I changed my mind.
All right. Thank you. So that concludes the speaker card. So, Mr. Kang, if you can come back to the podium and ask my colleague to ask questions or comment also, maybe comment on the speakers. And
how do you want to, whichever end do you want to
okay.
start with?
So maybe a proper order is that some of the speakers brought up some questions or comments associated with your presentation, and also some of them directed to our board. So we could start with that.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. So your research does conclude that there is value to nitrogen in irrigation water, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And there's a whole other side to the bigger picture that we're looking at, which is balancing the use of fertilizer and nitrogen with respect to its impact into groundwater.
Right.
So, I mean, what we're trying to achieve and our end goal is really not to be telling the farmers how much fertilizer to use per se. We just don't want them to be impacting groundwater with excess of nitrogen. Do you see some mechanism there in the way a farmer conducts his or her operation with, you know, you had one slide that showed, you know, what's currently in the soil with the test strips versus what's in the irrigation water, which is future nitrogen availability. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, expanding kind of your work somewhat, is there a way then for farming to balance that so that they're increasing their yield while at the same time they're not contributing to groundwater contamination?
Well, this is, you know, sort of what my career is about, is helping growers figure out how to be more efficient with both water and nutrients. And certainly if a grower took a look at how much they're typically applying fertilizer and compared to crop uptake, okay, this would be the growers that are sort of out there at 200% of crop uptake, right? For them, it's a very easy calculation, the nitrate in the water. You don't have to think much. You just subtract off the nitrate in your well, you know, if you know how much water you're applying and the nitrate concentration. Where it gets more challenging is the grower that's closer to crop uptake, right? Maybe they're applying 100-120% on average of crop uptake. Here, they're getting close to the edge, close to that edge of that curve where it would drop off. For those growers, they would have to take into account the soil nitrate levels, look at that much more carefully. And there's a lot of potential, right? If you take the nitrate in your water and you have this big source of N in the soil from residues, previous crop residues, might be able to really bring down the N application even further. However, that would change their operation quite a bit, because now instead of having a program where you manage most of the fields the same in terms of your N and your water applied, you're going to have to make adjustments for every application and every field. And this is logistically a big challenge with these operations. How we're approaching this is, there are growers that want to do this. We've developed application, you know, that works on a smartphone that can help them quickly calculate these types of things. But we're still finding it's a challenge to implement it.
But basically, we can, for the water application, a grower can set up their crop, and then when they decide they want to irrigate, they can find out, based on crop ET, what would be a reasonable amount of water to apply, so they don't over-apply the water and leach the nitrogen down. And then for the fertilizer, they can take a soil test using the quick nitrate test and enter that in and get a recommendation of what would be a reasonable fertilizer rate, okay? So we're trying to develop these tools that would help growers move from a framework where they're doing the same approach to all their fields to be able to customize for the soil type, for the conditions. This was where we need to go, but it may be many years in the future, because the workforce also has to change, right? We have irrigators with maybe elementary school education. We have ranch managers. They may not be really highly educated. And to get them on board, too, is really important. But it may take a whole other class of workforce. So I just want to explain that we see a direction we could go, and we would have to go to get to these lower nitrogen application rates and be more efficient with nitrogen fertilizer. But it's going to take time for the industry to evolve, really. I don't know if I answered your question exactly, but that's the big picture view there.
You think he answered it? You do. Okay. All right.
Mayor Delgado?
Yeah, a small question regarding something you mentioned about in your presentation and just now, that the growers would need to sample their soil to know how much is it nitrogen's in the soil before they plan their fertigation. And even, is it true that even that is very difficult? Because if you have an acre or you have many acres, the soil nitrogen available in the soil might be variable across that acre or those many acres, so that your sampling would have to be representative, which in itself could be a large burden.
Yeah, I mean, that's correct. You have to do, typically when we sample a field, we walk across and we take samples from maybe 12 spots, combine that together, and you get one number. But, you know, some areas are lower and some are higher. So what do? We err on being conservative. You know, if the soil nitrate is 10 parts per million, or maybe it's 15, and we know the threshold we really are shooting for is 20, we might decide to go with our full fertilizer application rate. What the test is really useful for is when you have really high nitrogen levels, and it's quite obvious, you know, when you test for the soil. The other aspect to this is growers are good observers of their crops, and they look at that crop and they say, boy, it's bright green and it's growing really nice. So they weigh that too with the soil test, I would say. But you're right, it's time consuming, it's expensive. You really have to dedicate staff if you want to do it right, and they have to be well trained.
So if you had 10 acres and you adjusted down your fertilizer because your soil sampling indicated that you had a good amount of nitrogen, but a half of your 10 acres turned out not to be growing well because it by chance wasn't properly represented in that sampling, so you got a less robust crop growing, your eyes told you, oh, there's a half acre. By the time you adjust and provide more nitrogen to that half acre, in the end, might your yield value in dollars be lower, to the point that next time you're just going to, you know, be liberal with your application?
Yeah,
that fertilizer.
That could happen.
Is that realistic, or is that the exception? Is that the norm, or is that the exception in the fields? That you have that kind of variability?
You know, I haven't heard from growers, you know, where they really ended up with a, sort of a train wreck because they lowered their nitrogen drastically. They're usually doing incremental reductions. So if they put on, for example, 25 gallons of fertilizer, you know, 50 pounds of fertilizer N per acre, they might reduce it by 5 gallons, go to 20. So go from 50 to 40 and see how that works. So it's incremental reductions because they don't want to have any yield loss. And in many cases, they also have a understanding that if we come out of a wet winter, no, you don't even need to soil sample. You know that the nitrate levels in your soil are going to be very low, so you go with your full fertilizer rate. If you're at your second crop and you're following a crop like broccoli, you know there's going to be probably good amounts of nitrogen in that soil. So the soil sampling is more for confirming what you suspect out there. What you're trying to pick out is, oh, my irrigator over-irrigated and leached that nitrogen out, so it wasn't as high as I thought. So soil sampling combined with just understanding the system and good observation can help, too, for making those decisions.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Johnson?
I want to thank you for your presentation. First of all, Dr. Khan, it was very informative. For me, at least, it went far past answering the binary question of is that nitrogen in the water bioavailable. So that was very useful to me. I appreciate it. And of course, what we as a board, the whole point of us as a board trying to understand this better, is that we're trying to figure out next steps in how we as regulators help to find solutions to the nitrate and groundwater problem. One of the paths which we may go down is trying to find ways to identify outliers in terms of nitrogen use related to demand and focus on them. The stuff about bioavailability of nitrate was very useful and interesting. The question I'm left with is, you know, I heard in your presentation that there is a tremendous variability of how much nitrogen is available in the soil at the start of a given crop cycle, depending on when in the season it is, how much rain there was, what was planted there last, and it came out in the chart that showed 20 pounds per acre applied and 40 pounds per acre uptake, So, you know, as we've tried to struggle with the question of nitrogen budgeting and using that to identify outliers, that's one of the big questions: is what's the starting point of nitrate in the soil, and is the most useful way? And I don't want to put you in the position of being a regulator, but is the most useful and practical way to do that to simply say, you know, soil sample at the start at planting, or soil sample at first fertilization? Because it seems like anything else that tries to take into account all those other factors of past rainfall and when in the season we are and what was planted there before have so many variables that they become impractical.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a very good question. How do you figure out what the mineral N is in your soil without measuring it. Experience in understanding the crops is what a lot of growers are really using, with sort of a backup when they're suspicious, they'll go out there and do soil sampling. There are some growers that every field before fertilization, at least the first side dress, they go out and take a soil sample, and they feel comfortable doing that to justify why they're putting the fertilizer rate that they are. It's expensive. It doesn't pay necessarily for the savings of fertilizer.
Fertilizer's cheap.
Yes. Fertilizer's cheap. Labor's expensive, if you haven't heard. And finding qualified people to do these jobs correctly and enter the data incorrectly is also a challenge. And if you have 5,000 acres of 10 acre plantings, you know, that's a lot of work, especially if you're doing that multiple times in a crop cycle. So I don't have a, okay, you know, a good answer what you would do besides measuring it.
Well, and of course our problem is that there are a range of practices among farmers, ranging from I'm doing it the way I've always done it, I'm relying on my eyes, to a very scientific and test-based methodology. And that range has, when we look at nitrogen application rates, gives us a huge range of application rates, some of which are clearly inappropriate. And you know, we are looking for ways that are realistic and that don't penalize farmers who, as the Santa Maria grower shippers were referring, who pump high nitrogen groundwater, but at the same time that are based in reality, not just some formula that's disconnected. So how, and I think Mayor Delgado asked this question, but in terms of time and energy to sand, I mean, a typical block might be 4 or 5 acres, right, in the Salinas Valley. How?
Or 10 to 15, yeah.
10 to 15, okay, so for a 10 to 15 acre block, to get just that reasonable snapshot of nitrate in the groundwater. I don't know if they do that in the soil, rather. I don't know if they do that before planting or before first fertigation.
Yeah.
How much time would that take to go and pull your dozen samples, mix them in a bucket? I don't know. You probably put a little water in,
yeah,
and take your dip sample.
Right. That
record it.
For one person, I've done it myself, you know, in an hour,
sure,
to 2 hours, basically have gone through there and soil sampled and mixed it up. How fast it is to get a uniform sample just depends on the soil type. If it's clay, you have to pinch all those little plugs. But in the hour to 2 hour range of time.
Thank you.
Oh. Okay.
Are we going this way, or?
That's fine.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I don't have that really much. I'm, you know, just cogitating on all this. I think the presentation was excellent, and I think it's really helpful for us. I don't think the intent is to make academics, you know, a regulatory entity or, you know, integrate them beyond the extent that they need to, but I think it's really important for the board to understand the process. So I appreciate that, and you know, I also appreciate the complexities that the growers face. But at some point, we're gonna need to come to some kind of compromise here to ensure that we're making the best decisions. So I have really no questions. I just appreciate all the information and thank you.
Likewise, thank you. That's really informative. So I am curious. You made the statement that by the time you got to the 2016-2017 field trials working with real farms, and farmers, you made the statement that farmers are interested in this approach. But we've just spent a lot of time discussing the variabilities and the challenges and the increased level of technical skill sets that, that probably don't exist generally. What was the experience of the farmers that conducted the trials on their fields? Did they walk away from that experience thinking, yes, I'm going to continue to develop my ability to use this approach, develop my operation, you know, in order to use this approach, more sophisticated, more challenging, more definitive, per crop, per farm plot, et cetera? Or did they walk away thinking, this isn't ready for me yet, but I'm interested? I mean, where do you think they ended up, just as a sample of an experience and seeing how it actually works?
Well, to be honest, we haven't completely followed up with all of our cooperators. I know at least one has year after year come back and asked us to work with them. And we hope that continues with some of the new cooperators. Mm-hmm. When I have gone back to some of the past cooperators, they have stated that they have reduced their fertilizer application significantly since we started working with them, not just about the nitrate in the water, but also soil testing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it can be done. And, you know, the first step is, you know, really looking at what their fertilizer nutrient plan is and seeing where there's opportunities to save on fertilizer. Sometimes, I mean, years ago, they used to put fertilizer routinely in the fall in their listed beds.
Right.
And that's a pretty rare practice now. Mm-hmm. And that was easy, low-hanging fruit that many growers took advantage of. Mm-hmm. And so what we are telling growers is if you have nitrate levels in your well that are 50, 60, 70 parts per million nitrate N, this is low-hanging fruit also, mm-hmm. provided the salinity isn't that high in the
right.
water.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And so I would guess those growers with those high nitrate wells are trying to take advantage of them.
Yeah, so
and figure it out.
Yeah, so that's where your statement is, that there is interest
in
determining, but it's very unique and specific to their operation. So the technical assistance has to be there, and then the education skill sets also have to start advancing in that direction.
Right.
Yeah, which is a time factor. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, definitely, many thanks for your presentation. And, you know, I think we all need to remind ourselves that farming is not a precise science, it is adaptive management. And, you know, there is not a cookie cutter approach. And, you know, when I hear concern, well, this takes time and they have to view things, you know, farmers walk the field, like you said. It's not a, you know, remotely out of a PC trying to manage, you know, their farm. And so it does require a lot of attention. And when we talk about the benefits of maximizing the utilization of the efficient utilization of fertilizer, you know, I think it's a little more than that, because the other nexus is also the timeliness of water application. You know, we did discuss ET. We need to remind ourselves that, you know, with these climate changes, if irrigation efficiency becomes more and more critical, and, you know, there's a significant amount of efforts and labor time spent on that too in the field. So I guess my point is that if it sounds that, you know, we're looking at a moving target with all these efforts, it is. you know, like we didn't discuss this part, or maybe I overlooked it in your presentation, but, you know, farmers also do sample plant tissues to look at what the nutrient content is. That's done routinely. So there's a lot of these activities. I would also look at it as there's been a lot of improvement and progress made in recent years. You alluded to that about some of the changes, but in recent years also, I think there's more and more attention done to improving fertilizer application, the use of crop advisor, and, you know, there are folks who make a living doing that, just nothing but going to the grower and say, okay, you know, this is what I recommend. So it's not as they do it all by themselves. They also have fertilizer companies who will come and do sampling on their behalf, because they're the one who provide the fertilizer. So there's a whole set of, you know, support around them. They're not on their own self. So that's basically, you know, kind of my overall observation, but very much appreciate, you know, the presentation you made. I will make a quick comment, that this is a little bit to supplement Ms. Gray comment. We, you know, that we had one of the speakers who expressed concerns of having regulators work too closely with the UC Cooperative Extension and academics. And I find that to be very puzzling to me as a comment. Simply, we look at CDFA. CDFA provides grants to academic institutions to do applied research and rely on this information to make decisions. USDA does the same. So I guess I was a little troubled by, you know, even the suggestion that inviting, you know, scientists and researchers, you know, could create a dark cloud. And usually the oppositions that I hear about regulation, well, there's not enough good science. You know, this is bad science. You haven't researched it enough. So I think we're doing what we've been asked to do, is to educate ourselves a little bit more and making sure we use good science. And the science that you provide is applied science. You know, we're not asking someone who's doing their PhD academic research to come with an abstract presentation on something that's totally theoretical. You spent tremendous amount of time, you know, with all these field applications. And then the last part, to still close that issue, is that I would suggest that members of, you know, the Grower Shipper Association and other organization are embracing folks like yourself, because I know you go to their field. They'll call you and say, hey, I need your help. So there's a very good trust established. And, you know, I frequently read articles about, you know, some of your field presentations. And again, I thank you for that. And great job. Thank you.
Thank you.
I just have a few more questions and then some comments. With soil sampling, and you had mentioned going throughout a field and sampling, is everybody sampling in a similar way in terms of depth? In other words, are you taking a surface soil sample as opposed to one that's down at the depth of the root zone or below?
Well, UC Cooperative Extension sort of develop a protocol for different crops that we recommend.
Okay.
So for vegetables, we're really sampling where the roots are at the time, where most of the roots are, in the top foot for the vegetables in the first.
So you're digging down 1 foot?
We have a probe, so just
okay.
Inserts, and it will go down to 1 foot. And actually, there's probes that you can go down to 3 feet. In the right soil type.
Okay.
There are cases in crops like broccoli where you're sort of curious where the nitrogen is, because you'll find in the top foot it's pretty well depleted, And in those cases, that would be later in the crop, and we might go down to the second foot and see if there's some nitrogen down there, just to give us, make us feel a little better about not putting fertilizer on. Because if there's still nitrogen down the second and third foot, the crop might be able to go without as much fertilizer.
Well, what have you found?
What's that?
What have you found?
Yeah, in many cases, like broccoli, it's very good at scavenging nitrogen very deep in the soil. And so, you know, if you look at what a lot of growers are doing for broccoli, they're applying less than crop uptake. They, by experience, know that broccoli is very efficient at taking up nitrogen. Same with Brussels sprouts. We found roots going down to 9 feet. And in the right, you know, in soil types that don't have any limitation in peating layers. Mm-hmm. In those cases, the growers are applying less nitrogen than you know, the crop is taking up. So there's some commodities that are very good at scavenging nitrogen because they have deep root systems.
Okay. And then I'm liked hearing what Dr. Wolf had to say just a few minutes ago, because it did address kind of the scowl that I had on my face, Claire, and that was, here we are trying to use science to inform our decision making as best we can. And I was reacting to your comment about the board should not do anything that starts to violate or damage the trust between ag and the, you know, UC cooperative or, you know, researchers. So, well, that's how I heard it. That's how I heard it. You may have meant something else, but I mean, that's how I heard it. And so that's why I had the look on my face. I wish I had more self-control and it wasn't so telegraphic that way, but it is what it is. And, you know, I look at this study is very important, and I really want to commend you for a very good presentation. It was, you know, very clear. I could also appreciate the nuances in it. And stepping back from it, it does start to address a question that has been posed and pending throughout the many years that we have been grappling with our ag orders, and that is nitrogen bioavailable in irrigation water? That really has been a very simple question that's been out there, and we've heard different opinions on that and conclusions depending on who's answering the questions. So I think this answers that question, that yes, there, it is bioavailable. Now, how that gets used by us remains to be seen, and how staff kind of reacts to this and what other work that they do. But, you know, we've got a few years left, so this answers a question. I mean, I'd like to know what staff takes away from this at this point.
So, yeah, I was going to also suggest, you know, or remind ourselves, this is strictly informational. Okay, so I'm not comfortable asking staff, okay, you know, give your inputs right now. We're listening,
right.
And that's where I think it should stay, if you don't mind.
I don't mind. I think it. We would perhaps like to be involved in staff's contemplation of this, because remember, we're on a short leash. I want to remind everybody, this is going to come back to us. And so I would just like to see what their reaction is, what other information they feel they need, you know, and it could be done any way, Dr. Wolf, you feel is appropriate in terms of our being able to reflect on this with them and the public, and to give some more input into this.
And to that end, actually, we do have a schedule that we're preparing next year, you know, to further move along with input from the public and also engagement of staff, and then as we work this schedule, you know, we can have session that'll be more interactive between us, the board, and staff. This gives also staff to digest a little bit this information we just received. Comment.
Yeah, so I want to comment. By and large, staff is already aware of the large proportion of information that was transmitted in Mr. Kahn's presentation. And I want to also acknowledge, we get paid to do that. I mean, we do that 40 and 50 hours a week. So that should be your expectation of us, that we're already aware of this information. This was in part a transferral of information to you, because you have much more limited opportunity to become aware of this kind of information, and you have to make well-informed decisions as we go forward with 4.0. So you asked what our reaction to it was. We've been here for a while with the bulk of this information. I thought it was an outstanding presentation. I want to say thank you to Mr. Kahn for that. I also want to ask, because during the break I was asked this, and I was thinking along the same lines, are you okay that we put, can we get a copy of your presentation and put it up on our website, such that I saw Claire taking photos, so that Claire doesn't have to take photos.
Yeah,
and the board members can reference back.
No, you're welcome to.
Perfect. Thank
you. It's already published. So.
Yeah. Great article, too, by the way.
Great. In fact, thank you for that, because in my wrap up, that was going to be a question. And if we can post that. And it's customary when we have presentations, is that, you know, we make it available to the public. What? Go ahead, Claire.
Come on up to this microphone.
Thank you. Claire Weinman with the Grower Shipper. I just wanted to clarify the intent of my comment, because I think it was misheard and misunderstood. We absolutely agree. We see tremendous value in having that conversation and bringing forward the information. We just want to make sure that Dr. Kahn remains highly respected in the industry. And the distinction that I was trying to reference is kind of going from understanding to UCCE, Dr. Kahn says that thou shalt apply this. And that's the step that I want to make sure that we stay on this side of, you know, understanding and continuing to understand and refining that understanding and how that converts to best management practices, to kind of regulatory ranges of UC says it needs to be this number and this number, but not that number. So that was kind of the next step in the intent of my comments, is making sure that it doesn't, help me find a better word than kind of, or I guess redirected, that's the most positive word that I can think, or warped or twisted, or the words that are coming to mind from, this is our research and extension to this becomes a regulatory range or a regulatory target. That was the intention of my comments, if that makes more sense.
Yeah, and you know, the reason I mentioned CDFA is that we are working very closely with Karen Ross' office. In not only, you know, at the executive level of Mr. Robertson and myself, but also with staff. And as you know, you know, CDFA is California Department of Food and Ag. So we work very closely with them, because they themselves work closely with UC Cooperative Extension. So this is sort of one of the resources, and not the exclusive resources. And you know, so we have made quite a bit of an effort to broaden these efforts. And in fact, we do give progress reports to CDFA and give them updates on our activities, solicit input from them, what some of the latest research their staff is doing, and in fact, we've had presentations.
And I was going to add to that, when we met with Secretary Ross 6 weeks ago, she recommended that we contact UC Cooperative Extension and have them come speak to our board. And we said, we are working in that direction. I mean, we were kind of in lockstep there with the idea, but I wanted to kind of accentuate the point that they were saying, go talk to UCCE and have them help you as a board, you know, grow your information and understanding.
So I appreciate that clarification, Claire. So my takeaway from this, and I just want to check your pulse on this, whether we can say that UCC does conclude that nitrogen in irrigation water is bioavailable. Is that appropriate for us to now conclude?
I don't want to get into the minutiae just as long as there is a but, as long as there is an understanding that it's not a... what do I want to say? I think just as long as we're kind of running in the background, kind of thinking things about what, you know, what is the EC, what is the kind of, what crop is it growing, the references to salinity. So I think just making sure that we're not looking at things and so black and white and saying, okay, well, you know, you had your well concentration was 42 parts per million nitrate, nitrogen, and therefore we're going to tag you as an AR outlier because you're always going to be higher. I'm not good at being on the spot, but that's what I'm trying to articulate is the concern of that we aren't looking at the context.
I'm not coming away from the presentation with that conclusion. All I'm coming away from is the simple answer to the questions that were posed in the research. Is it bioavailable? Is nitrogen bioavailable in irrigation water?
Yes.
And so my conclusion is yes, it certainly seems that way, and it remains to be seen how staff works that out in the permit.
Yes, and we would be supportive of that as long as there's kind of sensitivity to kind of the, you know, what the naturally, or the range and the naturally occurring levels of the nitrate concentrations and the ranges in salinity. Those would be our primary concerns. And again, kind of circling back to making sure that we're not creating that disincentive, because I think that did happen previously, and I and my members firmly believe that was to the detriment of groundwater quality in the Santa Maria Basin.
Thank you.
May I 30 seconds? 3 seconds?
Yeah, because what I'd like to do is, you know, move this item. Otherwise, it's going to be he says, she says, and we're back and forth. Certainly want to respect giving you the opportunity to clarify your statement. But, you know, beyond that, I'm not comfortable further probing in you know, other questions or actually to put you on the spot, which I don't want to do. So go ahead.
Just in summary, I mean, I'm not going to speak on behalf of all my colleagues, but I think we understand the complexities. However, I think this is important for all of us to, you know, have a common understanding and dialogue on some of these issues so that we can advance, you know, the process overall. And so for me, it should be empowering, not only for us, but also for the industry and for you so that we can create kind of a common baseline. So that was all I had to say.
Okay, perfect. We're getting close to the end of the table here, so go ahead.
I wanted to say thank you to Michael for your high caliber research and presentation. Thank you for the way that you downloaded it to us. I appreciate that. And I want to say thank you to Claire because you're a valuable conduit to a lot of stakeholders. And lastly, I miss Steve Shemek because we don't have him as a conduit to other stakeholders who might not be represented, but that's all I had to say.
Thank you. All right, so I think this concludes this particular item. I have just one question, which is a qualitative question. Have you tasted some of the lettuce?
Have I tasted some of the lettuce?
Yes.
Sometimes.
All right, because, you know, we talked about quantitative aspect. I'm like, did it taste good? And I asked about the lettuce. I didn't ask you about the broccoli because I know some people, you know, broccoli.
Actually, I would like to mention that once a year I give broccoli out for Halloween. It's well received by the children.
All right. Okay.
I was going to say, he's probably pretty popular. That's probably where they line up.
All right. So on that happy note,
again, many, many thanks for coming to us and give us this presentation. Well appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Quick one. I have a request for a quick break before the final item. So let's make it a quick, 5-10 minutes or so.
Yes.
All right?
Yes.
And